Hey everyone, this is Mike. So last week we began talking about Garfield the movie 2004, and we talked so much that this is the second half, so please join us for the conclusion of Garfield the movie 2004.
Some of your favorite cartoon characters will help you understand how drugs and alcohol can ruin your life. So watch the program. Talk about it with your family.
So, did he imagine what did he what was his vision for a Transformers movie with non-talking robots? Did he think it would be like, does he think people pilot them like Evangelion or something?
Maybe? I don't know. I think they thought it was going to be, I've always felt that those movies more followed the followed a monster movie, a kaiju movie than like, Transformers, it should be, just superheroes but scaled up for the most part. But
Right.
they've always sort of tried to portray them as much more alien in the movies than they are. And the fact that Bumblebee doesn't talk in the movies is their agreeing to disagree on that. It's like, okay, we'll make the main one not talk, but the rest will.
Huh. That's odd.
Yeah, it is really weird.
I mean, again, you like, well, like they said in Mr. Show, these are Hollywood executives. They know literally nothing.
Yeah.
Because that also reminds me, speaking of kaiju movies, when they took another pre-existing property and made it into a movie, an extreme a property that is extremely easy to make into a movie because it's a video game. Which is itself an homage to movies, actually a very particular genre of movie, kaiju
Ah,
movies.
we're talking Rampage, right?
Yes, exactly. Which, I'm sorry, how can you fuck up a Rampage movie? It, how?
I
I don't.
feel that it must have not actually started out as a Rampage movie. Like somebody actually had a kaiju thing in mind, and they were like, "Hey, you've got an ape and a lizard. If we add a giant wolf, this will be a Rampage movie."
Yeah, oh my God. It's just, again, just terrible. You watch it and you're like, oh yeah, these are people who like did not have any familiarity with the original property. And I'm sorry, you don't need a lot of familiarity with Rampage to make a Rampage movie. There's literally one.
There's one plot point in Rampage, but it's what sets Rampage apart from all the other kaiju things, which is that the kaiju were people. You get that
Yes!
in almost nothing else except maybe the Amazing Colossal Man.
Exactly! How do you fuck that up? I mean, obviously, the way is like, obviously, the reason they did it is because they were like, well, if they were thinking at all, was just like, look, we need a big Hollywood star in this movie, right? Big Hollywood star has to play the main guy. Unfortunately, the main guy is going to be a guy for what, 10 minutes and then turn into a giant monkey. Well, we can't have that. We can't have the Rock on stage for like five minutes and then just the monkey the rest of the movie. So make this about the Rock. The monkey's not that important. And plus it's like big, just I can't believe Liz isn't a lady. Liz isn't a girl. The big
Liz
lizard
isn't a
isn't.
girl?
It's
What?
so stupid. It's like, why
Oh
would you do that? Oh my God. I'm
my God. Is
sorry.
George a
They
girl?
missed the chance to have so much interesting DeviantArt fan art. But.
Maybe that's what they were avoiding. They were like, "Oh shit, this is gonna get all the monster fuckers out in force. We better tank this sucker."
Boy, just terrible. Terrible decisions by Hollywood, as usual. But anyway, why were we
So if you're
talking about
gonna make a
Rampage?
movie, don't go to Hollywood.
Yeah, for real. they don't know what they're doing there. Well, I mean, look at the strikes right now. They obviously don't know what they're doing, or they'd give the actors what they want, you know?
I'm just thinking of that meme with Sonic being like, I want games with worse graphics that are made slower and are shorter, and I'm not kidding! You know, that for movies, for real, basically.
God. I feel like... Wait,
how do you like my Garfield Sonic voice there? Gotta go like, fast, assholes!
It's like a living mirror made of snow. I'm trying to think. Was there something? Garfield. Why were we talking about? Oh, because Garfield.
About Garfield, it's certainly talks. Not related to this movie at all.
Okay, so Garfield, he talks. It's been established in the animated features he talks. I think they would have had to make him talk. I don't think they could get away with it being silent. Or just a cat.
It's still really weird, though. I guess it's not as weird as it was in Marmaduke, where he's talking away and, you know, his big saliva-covered lips are flapping away next to the humans and they don't hear him.
Yeah. I mean, I'm fine with, like, Garfield just talking and we assume, oh, he's talking cat talk and, you know, humans can't understand. Because that's a pretty standard, like, you know, movie thing.
But it does make it weirder that Odie doesn't.
Yeah, I know that it's just, I always assumed, because it's like, oh yeah, Odie is stupid. That's why he doesn't talk. I think that's what most kids assume, even though, because I was arguing with my wife when we were watching this, and she was like, why doesn't Odie talk? And it's like, is it because he's like, you know, stupid? And it's like, well, I guess, but he, obviously, in the comic, he communicates with Garfield very effectively through gesture and facial expression, and, you know, he's not like, and he just can't talk. You know, other dogs.
Also, Garfield speaks bark.
Oh, does he?
In the last like 5 years, 10 years, maybe, they've been doing this regular Garfield feature in the strip where Garfield will read a letter from the fans and Odie will answer. It says, you know, dear Ask a Dog, why does my dog continuously lick my crotch? And Odie will go, arf, 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 arf. And I don't know. I don't know what the cat, I don't know. What do you think the punchline is for that one? I didn't have one in mind.
Oh, because it tastes good.
Because somebody dropped barbecue sauce there once and we're always checking just in case.
That one's pretty good, actually. That sounds like it could actually be a Garfield punchline. In fact, Odie can talk. He is just not. He just only speaks dog, whereas all the other dogs,
like the rest of them,
right? The other dogs are all bilingual and can speak cat talk, or common tongue or whatever they use. Whereas Odie is he's the one dog who came, I guess, you know. Who never learned. He went to a underfunded school district or something.
Oh, I remember one that was good where Garfield was like, dear Ask a Dog, is it really necessary for dogs to bark that much? And Odie says, bark, 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 bark. And Garfield translates, no.
Yeah. Okay. That's pretty good. Still got it.
Still got it after all these years. Coming up on 50 years.
Damn. Well, good on you, Jim Davis. Hopefully we got some, well, you know what? I was going to say, hopefully he's got something better than Garfield the movie, but he's definitely, I feel like he's bounced back since then, because some of the more recent Garfield offerings are back to that Jim Davis weirdness that we've come to know and love.
Next year's Chris Pratt Garfield movie is, you know, we still know almost nothing about it, but
I still do not believe that to some extent. I feel like that is, well, I guess it'll be interesting to see if they decide to go, you know, if they make the Garfield movie that we're hoping that they had made, you know, the one that's more true to the spirit of Garfield, maybe a little more, you know, saying something about Garfield, about what he means to all of us. I have to say, the climax to this movie is, well, when I watched this movie, I was very high. So the climax of this movie.
When was the last time you watched one of our movies sober?
I don't do anything sober anymore. This is middle life. This is midlife for me. I was drug free throughout my youth, so I'm making up for lost time. You know, it was the 80s. I thought drugs were bad back then because I saw a lot of cartoons telling me that. But anyway, so because of that, when the climax of this movie happened, I was baffled by the concept of intercity rail travel. Like,
what is this, like, Europe?
Yeah, I was so confused because Happy Chapman is like, I'm going to take Odie. We're going on a train to New York. And it was like, wait, you're getting on a train? It was so strange because I was like, yeah, I know intellectually that trains exist and that you can take a train from one city to another city, right? Because I've done that, you know, in Europe, but I've done that in America too. Before I had a car, I would take the train when I wanted to go visit, you know, friends and family in other cities. I haven't done that since I had a car, so maybe I'm just now out of touch with, you know, the common man. But the fact that the climax of this movie happens because Garfield has to break into the office and reroute all the trains. And I was just like, wait, is this relatable to Americans? How many Americans take trains anywhere? Because I feel like Americans mostly take planes, unless, you know, you have a blood clot, you can't go in the air. So,
well, I took a train to New York last year.
Was it because you were going to be on the show with a dog?
No, it was because I wanted to go to New York City, and my girlfriend, who hates New York City, was like, fine, we'll go for you. So we drove from Connecticut. Yeah, we left the car in New Haven and took a train to New York. But it was light rail.
Oh. So light rail, not heavy rail.
No, not like it wasn't an Amtrak. But I imagine you could take an Amtrak to New York.
I suppose you could.
Of course, the thing is, we live way over on the west side of the country, so the idea of taking a train to New York is laughable. That's 2.5 days.
Yes, like, we wouldn't do it. Presumably, Garfield lives somewhere near New York, where it's reasonable to take a train.
Indiana, Muncie.
How long would it take a train from Muncie to New York? That still seems kind of long. I feel like, again, you would probably take a plane. But for whatever reason, Happy Chapman does not. He's taking a train. Wait, why does your girlfriend hate New York? Doesn't she know New York's the city that never sleeps?
Well, she doesn't like New York because every time she goes there, something bad happens. And, you know, I can't say that nothing bad happened, but I had a great time.
Yeah,
from Muncie to New York is a 10-hour car ride, or transit directions not available. Never mind. I guess you would have to take a car.
Okay, so I still feel like a train. Well, I get, yeah, you can't take a train in real life, so I guess that's movie magic for you. Look, yeah. I mean, if you can travel by bus, or you can travel by train. You can walk if you'd like and get soaked in the rain. But the best way to travel, I'm telling you, is to ride in the pouch of a red kangaroo.
Anyway, I didn't come in a plane. I didn't come in a Jeep. I didn't come with a pouch of high jumping Voveep.
So anyway, Garfield, he fucks up the trains, and that is what allows him to rescue Odie from Happy Chapman. And I guess that's the end of the movie. Did we miss anything?
We didn't mention the shock collar.
That's right. There is a shock collar. It does not look like shock collars look in real life. but
no,
you know,
it looks like a Frankensteinian creation that is made specifically to be cruel to animals, and it forces Odie to do tricks when the evil weatherman squeezes the remote control. Anyway, along the way, Garfield makes friends with some animals in the pound, and they come to help him, and they manage to get the collar onto Happy Chapman and make him do tricks for a while. And then John punches him out, and Liz is like, "Oh, John, you're so masculine."
I really didn't like that. That felt really out of character for John.
It does. John wouldn't. I can't imagine John even raising a fist in anger.
Yeah, it's just so weird, because, like, you know, and it's just all. But I guess they were like, "Look, we need John to be an action movie hero, so this is what people expect." But yeah. I don't know. It's like in the Star Trek movies where Picard suddenly is making action quips and, like, murdering people, and it's like, "Oh, you mean that nice, like, diplomatic British man? Suddenly he's, like, angry all the time." So yeah, I don't think that is a proper characterization of John. I have very, very particular feelings about John's characterization. He should be a nerd.
Yeah. Did you know that Breckin Meyer is the voice of Dale Gribble's son on King of the Hill?
I did not know that. You mean Joseph?
Yeah, Joseph, the one that, you know, is ostensibly not Dale's biological son, but he's the dad anyway.
Right. Oh, I didn't know that. Well, good for him. I guess, like I said, I don't feel like anything is wrong with him in this role. I just feel like he doesn't get a lot to do. You know,
it kind of feels like he's the stand-in for somebody that's, you know, is going to do the major performances, but then he's there for the major performances too.
Yeah. I mean, again, this movie just doesn't have anything for anyone to do and doesn't really like characterize our characters very much.
I mean, that's the problem, is that it assumes you're familiar with Garfield and then it gives you an unfamiliar version of Garfield.
Yeah. It's really, it made me, it really made me think about another film that I think we'll be doing eventually. Do you know the Over the Hedge movie?
No, I've never seen it.
Okay.
Are you familiar with the Over the Hedge comic strip? Because I barely remember it.
I used to read it. It's a serviceable comic. I'd say it's a serial piece comic. But I think it's interesting because the Over the Hedge movie, they obviously were like, "Okay, we've got this property, Over the Hedge, let's do something with it." And they made an actually very good movie that expands way on the comic and actually characterizes the characters way more than they are in the comic strip. Yeah, which is interesting compared to the Garfield movie, where they're just like, "Yeah, we're just going to give you the really watered down version because nobody cares about it." Which is funny because it's like, wait, I feel like more people would care about a Garfield movie than an Over the Hedge movie, because who reads Over the Hedge? Whereas Garfield is, you know, the titan of the comics page. But I don't know. I think just nobody involved in the Garfield movie, you know, really cared that much. And I feel like, cause even I remember that people like interviewed Jim Davis at the time, asked him about that Odie thing. Like, why isn't why is Odie a real dog? And he kind of did that usual thing you do when you've got a movie coming out. You're like, "Oh, I think it's a really interesting and valid way to do the movie. And, you know, Odie is, you know, he's really like the idea of a dog. And, like, you know, we're all a little bit Odie inside," you know, like giving that very vague answer where he's basically like,
"Odie isn't big or small or tall or short or male or female."
Yeah, exactly. The answer was that if you translate it, basically what Jim Davis is saying is, like, "I don't give a shit. They gave me money." You know, he's like the John Carpenter of the comics page.
Real. This will be forgotten.
That's right.
The comic strip is real. This will be forgotten.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. This was kind of designed to be forgotten, but again, it's just strange to me because I feel like they could have made this into a movie that had some staying power. They could have made this into, you know, the Garfield movie.
Yeah.
I feel like if they hand you something and they say, this is the Garfield, this is going to be the Garfield movie, you know, you'd probably be like, oh shit, I better make something good. Cause like Garfield's a big fucking deal. Big fat hairy deal. In fact,
yeah.
You know, you know, and even in 2004, cause like people still read comics back then, you know, the newsprint wasn't dead. It was still huge. And, yeah, I mean, also, you know, there's a lot of stuff in this movie that obviously it's a movie for babies based on a cartoon. So a lot of cartoony stuff happens, which probably would have been better if this was an animated movie.
You know?
Like, for real. You know, Garfield goes to the pound and it's basically like jail for animals, which is pretty standard, but it would have been better in animated form because it starts to get a little weird when they're like, there's literally a cop running the place and he's making the animals line up like they're doing mugshots. And it's like, yeah, I get what's happening. It would have been better if this was animated because when it's live action, it's a little goofy.
There's a certain level where it goes from, I get the joke to feeling like you just didn't do the research as to what pounds are like.
Yeah. And like, you know, when Garfield is in that building in the vents.
Yes. And
the janitors are like looking, watching the vents with like this computerized system. And they're like, oh, there's a mass in the vent. Better purge the whole system. You know, they push a button to like blow Garfield out. And it's like that. First of all, the fact that the vents are big enough to allow Garfield to crawl through them is already like kind of, you know, out there, but standard movie stuff. But I just love the fact they have like this high tech computer system to monitor the vents. It's like,
and it shows the mass moving through in real time where they're like, wee.
Yeah, it's like that's not how anything works, you know. But if this was a cartoon, I wouldn't blink an eye. The fact that it's like live action, I was kind of like, yeah, okay, sure, whatever. It's just,
it really demonstrates what happens on the other side of the uncanny valley.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Yeah, that's really it. Let's see. Anything else about Garfield the movie that we should mention? We get, I guess I should say, we get a small role by Richard Kind as, you know, a classic voice guy.
Yeah.
As a rat, yeah.
He's of very course, kind.
Yeah. You will all know Richard Kind from his many, many, many appearances in so many different things. But
if you don't know him, just think of Molt from A Bug's Life. That's the first thing I associate with him.
Yes. It was just kind of funny that he's got such a small role in this because, you know, I was like, oh, but I guess he's a working actor. So, you know, we also have Nick Cannon as the mouse. He was big at the time, I feel like. And you know, I'm going to say something a little controversial, I think.
Oh, go ahead.
This is a thing that was very big in dog movies at the time and probably still is. And dog movies being movies about like where they have dogs who talk.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that is the idea they love when they're like, what if a dog sounded ethnic? Would that not be the funniest thing in the world? And they do a little bit of, Nick Cannon is kind of doing that because he's obviously trying to, you know, he calls Garfield G and he's all like, watch out for the popo. And, it, you know, he's kind of trying to
kind of blacking it up.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, I'm from the streets, you know, from the meat, like that sort of thing. And it's like, okay, I mean, it's one of those things where I feel like the movie thought like, this is going to be really funny. It's really funny that a mouse talks like a black guy. And it's like, I mean, okay, movie.
I feel like this is why Nick Cannon made black supremacist statements later in life.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that about him.
He said that white people were savages who were closer to animals and stated the only way they can act is evil.
Well,
I mean, not wrong.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, well, you know, he's not wrong. I can say it because I'm white. White people suck. Except for me, I'm one of the good ones. I mean, I don't want to say that a black guy cannot voice a mouse in a movie for babies.
No.
I just feel like the way his performance is, I feel like the writers or the director was like, this is going to be really funny because people won't expect a mouse to sound black. So
I feel like it was not a role written for Nick Cannon. It was a role written for a black person.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
I'm not sure what part of it was written specifically with, oh, this is going to sound great from Nick.
Yeah. It reminds me of a lot of those early Michael Bay Transformer movies where Michael Bay was like, you know, it's very, very funny when a black person is loud. And it was weird watching them. I forget, like, they were in the early 2000s, right?
The first one was 2007, then 2009. Okay. So close enough.
Okay. So I just remember watching those and being like, this is very strange because I feel like this is racist. You know, this is a style of humor that was probably very big in like the 40s, you know, but it's just like when you're watching it and like, it's like these black hair, every single black character in this movie is like one step away from shucking and jiving. It's kind of uncomfortable, you know, but I guess Michael Bay is like,
I cite Sean Baby a lot because he has a lot of quotable stuff on this. There was an article where he was talking about the movie Black Knight with Martin Lawrence, where he says, this is another one of those movies that makes the case that the right man for the job is a noisy man who likes to dance and says motherfucker a lot.
That would be the right man for that job. being a Black Knight, I guess. Oh, wait, is it called Black Knight because Martin Lawrence is a black man who becomes a knight?
Yes, he's a knight and he goes back in time to King Arthur.
Oh, so it's like a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's court type deal, I guess. Oh, okay. All right. I have not seen Black Knight, but now I kind of want to. I'm curious about... I'm curious what kind of pathos Martin Lawrence brings to the role of the Black Knight.
Can't say I was ever a Martin Lawrence fan, but you know, I am curious just from that description.
Well, I have seen I have seen Martin Lawrence in several films as well as the television series Martin, which is named for Martin Lawrence because he was on it. And I have to say, I definitely agree with Sean Baby. He is a very loud guy. He is a guy who thinks being loud is very, very funny. And it's just, I mean, he's not my favorite comedian. I don't recall him ever telling a joke, to be honest, but maybe I'm being unfair. But I do remember him being very loud. I might be being unfair. It's been a long time. Yeah, I guess he was the man. He was a man before his time.
Yeah.
The important thing to take away from this digression about mouse voices is we are not being racist. Do not put in your newspaper that we're being racist. We're just saying the movie making some assumptions here. But I guess it's good that they didn't like have, you know, the usual thing that movies of this sort do where they're like, okay, we're gonna have a French Siamese poodle
cat that speaks with oriental quote-unquote accent.
Or like a chihuahua that sounds very, you know, like the Taco Bell chihuahua.
I mean, there were so many damn dogs in this movie. It's just frustrating.
They were just, I don't recall any of their voices. I guess there was Doberman that had kind of the big dumb guy voice.
That was Brad Garrett. You might know him from various Pixar movies.
Oh, okay. Who else has he played?
I think he's best known for being Ray Romano's brother on Everybody Loves Raymond.
Yes, that's right. I thought that big dumb guy voice was kind of familiar.
Yes. and he was Dim the giant beetle in A Bug's Life, and he was Bloat the porcupine fish in Finding Nemo. A bunch of other things.
Gotcha. Okay, so yeah, I have seen him around. We've got
Oh, and he was Gusteau in Ratatouille. I didn't recognize him with the French accent.
Huh. Oh, huh. I didn't know that. Looks like we also have Jimmy Kimmel as some other dog, I guess.
Yeah, Sparky, unnamed in the film. Huh.
Yeah, I don't know which remember one
Sparky
that.
Was, but Jimmy Kimmel has certainly gone on to do good since then.
Yeah, we've also got Alan Cumming as as another cat. Himself. He's a persnickety.
Persnickety, yeah.
And so you know they got some.
Yep.
You know they got some talent in this movie.
Flubes the Madman, help us save us.
But this movie is you know what else? I guess another thing. Do you recall? Okay. Here's the thing. If this movie was made by people familiar with the Garfield canon, obviously the villain who kidnaps Odie. Well, first off, I think making it Jim Davis would be the best thing to do. But
that would be really funny.
Yeah, but failing that, they should have. Do you remember the character in Garfield and Friends who had the really big nose? Remember this guy?
The guy who kept showing up as like a salesman.
Yes, he was always trying to scam John, and he appeared in a bunch of episodes. They should just have that guy.
Yeah, I really feel like this guy was a stand-in for Binky, and it would have worked better if it was actually Binky.
Actually, yeah, no, you're right. That's who they should have done. They should have done have Binky, which would have been way better, honestly, more entertaining because it's a villain with personality.
Yes.
They
could have gotten Martin Lawrence because he's loud.
Yeah. You know what? Gosh, actually. 2004 casting Martin Lawrence as Binky the Clown would have been an extremely groundbreaking move because that would be the first example of race shifting a character. It'd never been done before 2004. Never been done. I think I'm just making that up. I don't know if it's been done.
How do you know that Binky isn't black?
Good point. Binky, actually, you're right. Binky might be black. We don't really know, do we?
Yeah.
I think
we've never seen him outside of his makeup.
I do think, though, because we do live in America, that most people probably assume Binky is white because we do live in a white supremacist society where white is the default norm. So we just assume that unless we're told otherwise. So I think most people like me would have assumed Binky is white. So having Binky played by a black man would cause... Now, in 2004, would that cause people to lose their minds the way it would in 2023? Because if you did that today, people would absolutely lose their minds because we do have this nascent neo-Nazi movement happening. But I feel like in 2004, people might not have been might have been more accepting of that.
I think in a pre-Obama society, racial pluralism was not yet public enemy number one for these people.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're right. I think they kind of felt like I think they still didn't like it. They still hated it. But I think they had the sense that they could not say it out loud. And yes.
If you still believe the same things, but you don't yell it out loud, you're called a moderate.
Yes, that has been the process of the last 12 years has been this process of finding out that like all the bad things that people thought they weren't supposed to that they get in trouble for saying, it turns out, oh no, they can just say it and they're doing it. And it's less like we're at the point now where it's like, hey, you could just kill people. It's fine. It's totally fine. You just kill minorities you don't like. Nobody will stop you. This is not advice. I'm being darkly cynical. And that quote was like in the voice of you know, a character that might be playing. I'm not actually saying
kind of
anyone.
That's the kind of thing that Scott Adams would say.
Yeah, yeah. We're not saying that. Do not take it out of context. Do not put in your newspaper that we said you should kill all minorities. It's not what we're saying. We're going to get in trouble here for fucking Garfield the movie. anyway, Garfield the movie. Let's see. Anything? I'm trying to think if there's anything that we missed about it.
Well, where did you watch your version?
We watched it through Hulu, I think.
Oh, okay. I watched it on Disney Plus. So, but they're owned by the same people, so it makes sense. And one thing that's funny is that this movie was preceded in its theatrical release with an Ice Age short film, Gone Nutty, which, as you might guess, is about Scrat.
It makes sense. I feel like it should have been preceded by a Garfield cartoon.
Yeah, it really should have.
But I guess they were like, look, we are trying to make Scrat into a thing.
Yes.
We want the kids to be asking, where's Scrat? Whenever Scrat's not on screen. Then we want Scrat to like have wacky shenanigans chasing a nut, and also to get abducted by sexy aliens who look just like him and will inspire lots of DeviantArt fan art. I assume that there's a lot of DeviantArt fan art of those sexy Scrat aliens, but
I have never seen these sexy Scrat aliens.
Oh, well, you're in for a treat. Let me just Google sexy Scrat alien. Sexy Scrat alien. I'm going to see if this actually shows up. Oh, Scratazon. They're called Scratazons, apparently.
Scratazons.
Oh, yeah. This picture doesn't really do justice to them. Oh. Well, you know what? You can get the idea. If I'm going to put it in here, you can see. Okay. Look at these. You can kind of guess that these are supposed to be like sexy squirrel people.
I guess.
I mean, you know, if you saw them, they have like long kind of like gams, you know. I think since it is for a kid's show, they also couldn't like make their boobs as big as they wanted. But, no, you know,
but they did add eyeliner and eyelashes. And those, of course, are secondary sex characteristics for cartoon characters.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, that was Ice Age when they were trying to really make Scrat be a thing.
Yep. And then they lost the copyright to Scrat.
Oh, really? Oof, how embarrassing.
Yes.
They should have spent more time getting the copyright to Odie so that they could make a decent fucking Garfield movie.
God, how weird would it be if again, it had been John adopting Scrat?
Well, you know, God, knowing the way these executives think, I would not put it past them.
I guess that'd be sort of like how they wanted to be Calvin and Hobbes and Robot Man.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, hey, speaking of not knowing Garfield, very minor detail, but I'm going to mention it because even my wife, who is not a Garfield fan, noticed this blunder, this error that Garfield sleeps in a little bed in this movie.
Yes! Where's his bed box?
Exactly. We all know Garfield lives... He sleeps in a bed box. Not an actual little person bed.
Yes. He sleeps in a bed box with all the edges tucked in around him so he looks like a pupa or something. And
yeah.
And this version of Garfield has a alarm clock. He wakes up early on purpose. And... No, but the thing is, he has an alarm clock, and then you see him go right to John's bed to wake John up. It's like, so the alarm clock didn't wake John up, huh? So, what, was it? Is it only on the cat frequency?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, it's like, oh, he's got to wake up to feed Garfield. Okay, yeah, it's like, well, he's right, I guess.
At least Pookie looked okay.
Yeah, Pookie looks like Pookie, so they got that at least.
He has that very distinctive, you know, three dots pattern for Pookie's face, so they didn't mess that up. That's like the only thing they didn't mess up. Did they get the rights to Garfield and Pookie, and that's it?
Man, yeah, because everything else in this movie... Did they accidentally
license, like, a picture of Garfield holding Pookie?
I feel like, yeah, it's like they just, they didn't want to pay the extra money to Jim Davis, and they're poorer for it, you know? Pay the man. Give the man invented the iconic characters. Give him the money, because he earned it. But, you know, these network guys, boy, I can't wait to see how they fucked up Garfield 2, A Tale of Two Kitties.
Oh boy. We're gonna take a look at that soon, but we've got something special planned for you for Thanksgiving, so you know, be prepared. Be very prepared. And eventually we'll get to Garfield and the Rough, which we thought we were recording, but we didn't.
Yeah, that was a big whoopsie doodle on my side. But don't worry, because at least now you get Garfield the movie a little bit early, and you got to hear all I guess my final takeaway about this is, like I said, probably one of the weaker, if not weakest, Garfield medias that I've seen. I would put I would put this below that weird French Garfield show that we watched.
Yeah. I mean, okay. So there is a book out now, which is a graphic novel story of Stan Lee's life. Mm-hmm. The first page of it is a couple of kids coming up to Stan Lee at a convention and being said, "Hey, I can't believe you're getting to meet you. We're, you know, we're your biggest fans. Could we get an autograph?" And they put a comic in front of him, and he picks up the pen, and his handler says, "Stan Lee." And he starts kind of writing, and the handler is like, "STAN." And I'm starting to wonder if maybe that's the situation that Jim Davis is in.
Oh, man. That really makes me sad.
I hope not. I hope he's doing well. I normally wouldn't wish the best for somebody who has had a better life than I could ever dream of, but you know, I think he deserves better than, you know, to be a autograph and signature making machine for, as Garfield gets swallowed into the great Nickelodeon machine, the great Nickelodeon GAC inflator.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say this, like, after, you know, we've seen Garfield the movie, and we've seen, you know, Garfield Eats, which are some bizarre thing, you know, bizarre things that feel like someone's getting, there's some elder abuse happening, you know, like it's like, I don't know what's happening, but it seems like someone should check in on Jim Davis. But then we've also got like Garfield's Pet Force and Garfield's Fun Fair and Garfield Gets Real, all of which are absolutely insane, but only in the way that Jim Davis makes things insane. So that kind of gives me hope that Jim Davis is still, you know, got his hands firmly on the wheel and is still steering Garfield towards, you know, what he really believes in. But I don't know. I don't know. We'll have to make that
think that maybe he hired somebody that is reining him in now, not so much that he himself isn't able to express himself so much as that there's somebody who's just like, this is a little weird, Jim, try something else. I would like to think that, you know, the factory is still operational, but they've got more quality control.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're moving in, we're in, you know, 2023. So, the things that like are going to fly now, not the same things that would have that were big in the, you know, seat of your pants 80s, you know, it's things are a little more, quantified these days, you know? But whatever. Anyway, I don't bother watching Garfield, the movie. Nobody else did. Yeah. So,
yeah, I can think of one very good reason to watch Garfield the movie. And that's if you run a podcast about bad adaptions of comic strips. So
yeah, I mean, so, this is
the movie has served its purpose.
Probably the worst adaptation, actually, now that I think about it, that we've seen of a comic strip into something.
Even that very early one where they had like the voice of Jonathan Winters or something as Garfield, that was still better.
Yeah. I mean, this does kind of violence to the whole Garfield concept in very subtle ways that make me angry. Putting aside the whole Odie thing, which is not subtle at all. And if nothing else, even if this was a good Garfield movie, that choice to me to have Odie as a real dog still makes it completely unacceptable in any way.
It's just,
it
almost feels like when they substitute like the producer's kid for a character that everyone is expecting, like, you know, instead of Batman and Robin, it's Batman and Tiffany.
Yes. Well, you know what else I noticed? So the director of this movie, Pete Hewitt. Mm-hmm. And we've got Jennifer Love Hewitt in this movie.
Oh, I wonder. I don't think I made the connection.
So, I'm just wondering if, you know,
maybe it doesn't say anything about them being related on their Wikipedia pages, but those don't always have everything.
Yeah. All it says about him on his Wikipedia page is that his cousin is a longtime animatronic designer for Jim Henson's Creature Shop.
Oh, really? Interesting.
That's Simon Hewitt. Also, apparently, Peter Hewitt expressed interest in directing a Garfield sequel. He became attached to direct a 2006 movie, Zoom, and as such was unavailable to direct Garfield's sequel, which was instead directed by Tim Hill, which is ironic because Peter Hewitt is British and Tim Hill is American, and the Garfield sequel took place in Hewitt's native country of England, which I guess Wikipedia thinks that's interesting because that is a very not interesting fact to add to a guy's Wikipedia page.
Yeah, that's... I don't know. I wonder if that's something... Oh, apparently that's something that Peter Hewitt said himself on the DVD commentary. So that's... So it must have been something that he thought was interesting.
It's okay, because even though he couldn't make the Garfield sequel, he went on to direct I Want Candy and Mostly Ghostly, Have You Met My Ghoul Friend?
The hell? Oh, it's an R.L. Stein thing. That makes sense.
Yeah, it looks like it may be the spiritual successor to I Downloaded a Ghost. but anyway, so Peter Hewitt, maybe they'll bring him back for the Chris Pratt Garfield movie. Who knows?
I don't know who's directing that. Who's directing that?
Well, we'll see. Anyway, Garfield.
Mark Dindal.
Yeah.
Oh, all that's right. The director of Cats Don't Dance. You mentioned that earlier. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
It's the director of Emperor's New Groove. Maybe this would work. I don't know.
Well, that's for the new the new Garfield movie?
Yes.
Huh. Okay. Well, I guess we'll see. I'm cautiously intrigued at this point.
Yes. We'll find some opportunity to see it.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess that's it for Garfield.
Yep. Give me Mondays. I hate lasagna. Wait. Well, that's about right for this movie, honestly.
Love me, feed me, don't leave me.
Oh, that's it. That's what I'm going to build my restaurant around. That's it. There. Somebody get me a tailor. I need to have a suit made.